You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 10 July. Chinese year-on-year inflation, 0.2%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Chantal Marks, Head of Research at FNB Wealth and Investments, Teboho Makabane from Sanlam Investments, Impact of Responsible Investing, and John T. Sachs from Joltech. Has 100 days plus load shedding, no load shedding. Is it impacting solar installations? The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from CNBC. Fed Chair Jerome Powell says holding rates high for too long could jeopardize economic growth. That was his testimony to Congress. He would be right about that. Business Day, steel tariff boosts ArcelorMittal SA's prospects. Tariffs come as a major producer is trying to find its feet amid lower demand. Morning markets, US was green with both the S&P and the NASDAQ up a little, 0.07%. Over in the East, mostly green, Sydney up a third of a percent, Tokyo down two-thirds of a percent, Hong Kong up half a percent, and Tencent a tenth of a percent higher. Commodities, mostly red, gold the exception, 2,374, Brent 84.43, platinum 9.98, palladium 9.82. The rand is 18.14, bitcoin's 58,000, and top 40 opening call a red open, 80 points or 0.1% to the down.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Chantal Marks, Head of Research, FNB Wealth and Investments. Chantal, appreciate the early morning. You obviously spend your days looking at local JSC stocks and the like, but I thought FNB's got a wide range of single stock ETNs. And truthfully, there are a couple of indice ones in there. The question to you is, these are foreign stocks. It's your Eli Lilly's, Coca-Cola's, Meta's and the like. Which one of those is sort of high on your list? Do you look at and think, there is an ETN worth putting into a local portfolio?
Well, first I have to say that there are some ETNs that would have done exceptionally well over the last few months. I mean, we launched Booking, Eli Lilly, Nvidia and PayPal a few months ago. And already over the last 3 months, we've seen Nvidia's Quanto exposure. So that's the one that doesn't have currency exposure. Mm. Up by 56%. Eli Lilly up 27%. Palo Alto up 20%. Booking up 16%. And some of the older ones also did quite well. I mean, we do have the Magnificent Seven thematic playing out. So over the last 3 months, we've had Alphabet also returning 22.5%. Apple up 26%. We have had some of the Magnificent Seven not do that well. I'm thinking specifically around Microsoft, Tesla, and Amazon. But I mean, really, the instruments generally have been performing very well. So I've asked myself, I mean, where does the value lie currently? Because I think that there is a little bit of nerves coming into the market around Magnificent Seven valuations. So, I mean, in terms of valuation, I do think that you could get more bang for your buck in some of the boring ones like McDonald's, Visa. Mm-hmm. I think those two really stand out for me. Berkshire Hathaway, always a good idea when you are a bit nervous about the market, because Warren Buffett and co do tend to outperform the S&P 500, particularly when it is going down. And then if you really want Magnificent Seven exposure, I'd go for Amazon among that basket.
Okay. I'm holding the Nvidia one. I didn't get to 50-odd% because I got the Rand exposure, which is the next point. I mean, they come in the two flavors, the Quanto and the Compo. And I mean, there's lots of jargon around that. Essentially, the one does not have the Rand exposure, so you just get the move in the sense. And then the Compo does have Rand exposure. Would you look to take Rand exposure or would you remove that? And is that a decision which you make looking at the current currency, or just generally you would say one or the other?
I think it depends on whether or not you're a long-term or short-term investor. So if you are a long-term investor, the rand generally depreciates over time. That is because of differences in interest rates, in inflation in South Africa, the fact that we normally run a current account deficit. These factors really play a role in the rand depreciating over time. So then I would want the currency exposure, and I wouldn't be too bothered around where I get in. But if you are a shorter-term investor, I would really be more concerned around the weakness of the rand right now. I think that there is room for rand strength in the near term, particularly if the US starts cutting rates. And then I would prefer the quanto option, which basically just gives you the share price move without the currency stuff.
Yep, I take your point on that, absolutely. It is, if you've got time on your side, then, I mean, truthfully, the rand would do crazy things in the short term, but in the long term, it will weaken. We'll leave it there. Chantal Marks, Head of Research at FNB Wealth and Investments, Visa, McDonald's, Berkshire Hathaway, and if you want some big tech, Amazon. Appreciate the early morning.
Your money knows it's not just about the money. It's about your returns, returning the favor, and empowering people. Your money can do more to change the narrative. Beyond delivering consistent returns, investing in the Stanlib Kanyisa Impact Investment Fund can help eradicate poverty and protect the environment. Invest for more impact at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Tebogo Makabane, Head of ESG and Impact at Sanlam Investments. Tebogo, appreciate the early morning time. Let's start off a little broader with the sort of responsible investing. And it certainly has been on the rise, I was going to say for many years, but truthfully, for well over a decade. And this is the idea that when you're looking to invest, there are some non-financial factors, such as the ESG, the environmental, the social, the governance, that are included into an investment decision and decision-making process.
Good morning, Simon. Thank you for having me on the slot. Yeah, so you're right. ESG has been coming out for a while, but I think more recently now it's become more defined where now it's, you know, before you used to have people invest based on ethical reasons and screen out stocks that they thought were not morally okay. But it's evolved where we're considering environmental issues, you know, with the rise of climate change. We know that, you know, there's carbon tax. If you're a company that emits a lot of carbon emissions, there might be carbon tax that might, it's non-financial, but now some of these environmental things are becoming financial. Social issues such as, I mean, if you're a healthcare provider, you know that human capital is a big thing. Mm-hmm. You have nurses leaving, going to the UK. You have to train them, get certification. That's a cost, an expense. So it's all these E and S issues that were a bit silent, but now they have financial impact. There's materiality to them, and hence the rise in responsible investing.
Yeah, and I take your point. I mean, back in the day, it was, well, I won't buy British American Tobacco because tobacco, but it has become a lot more nuanced in that regard. And from a leadership position, I mean, I would imagine, particularly within the continent of Africa, within sub-Saharan Africa, South Africa is probably playing a fairly significant role. I mean, we've got a large investment a pool of cash, and we can deploy and really help drive this.
Yeah, we definitely can. I mean, if you look at the African continent, you're right, South Africa has much more pool of cash, but also the research done by the UCT Graduate School of Business, which shows like of the South African pool of cash, more or less 60 billion rand, so it's an AIFA barometer, is put towards responsible investing. And what they say is, you know, while we're looking at those risks that that an investment company has to consider when investing, there's also opportunities that if we don't address certain social issues, those also pose a risk. So if we don't address unemployment, that will be a long-term risk for the economy as well. So you want to direct capital, you know, that $600 billion that South Africa is using towards responsible investing, towards also creating impact and investing in job creation, infrastructure products for renewable energy, knowing like we also have that energy crisis, inequality, maybe more in affordable housing. So we have an opportunity to use this capital responsibly, not only from a risk, but also moving the needle in important sectors for the country.
That's a great point, because, you know, we sort of started with we don't buy British American tobacco. Then we moved into the environmental, social and governance. And now that sort of third part is the impact investing. ESG is around compliance, around avoiding harm. Impact really is, hang on, what is the positive outcome? And you mentioned around job creation, around uplifting communities, improved infrastructure, which, you know, has the impact of both job creation and improved life for communities.
Yeah, I like what you say, that, you know, we did start with just saying, I'm not going to invest in this. It's not ethically correct, British Tobacco. But now we're moving, you know, not just compliance all the way to impact. And I think impact investing, it still doesn't get as much allocation as we needed to as a country, given the need. But it's more intentional now. It's not only like, I don't want to create harm, but I, over and above avoiding harm and risk, I really want to make a difference. So it requires that you're intentional with that amount. We do invest in education, healthcare. You know, we invest along. Our country has the NDPs, 2030 plans. We try invest in those areas that have been identified as growth areas, but areas that the country has to look at. And that's why impact investing comes in, where you intentionally being impactful with your investment, not just from a risk perspective, but for just opportunities and growth.
And then it brings me to the point is that in many senses, this is theoretical. Are we able to measure properly? Because measuring must now be the next important part of this process, so that we can kind of confirm that what we're doing is working, is helping, and is making a benefit.
Yeah, I mean, it's important that we measure, otherwise we won't be able to really see if we're making a difference. So if we take some of the investments in affordable housing, I think as an investor, you really want to check if I'm investing this affordable housing unit, what's the pricing, the rental pricing or purchase price there, and what's the income bracket for South Africans who really need that amount? So you want to measure in my portfolio, I've invested in these units and this is the impact they're making. If you want to invest in job creation, you know, you intentionally look at those sectors that are known to be job creators or companies that are on a growth trajectory. And you measure, you know, the type of jobs you're creating. The quality of jobs is also important, you know, that are above minimum wage, so that, you know, and hopefully more permanent. I mean, temporal jobs are important too in our country, but the more permanent jobs we have, you know, the more we address the inequality. So it's those KPIs that you want to make sure you're tracking to really prove your business case of, you know, I mean, responsible investor creating impact. So you have your financial returns and you can also show the KPIs of impact.
Yeah, and of course you can tweak the process as it goes along and ultimately get better at it. We'll leave it there to Bogo Makabane, Head of ESG and Impact at Sanlam Investments. Appreciate the early morning.
Your money knows that reaching new heights means turbulence. But what if you don't have to feel it? Our partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management gives you access to a broad range of global strategies. So when you invest in StanLib's Global Multi-Strategy Diversified Growth Fund, your money can withstand the ups and downs caused by market fluctuations. Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Jonty Sachs, partner at Joel Tech. Jonty, appreciate the time today. The big news, over 100 days of no load shedding, which is frankly glorious news. No one's going to argue with that. Question is it having an impact on solar installations? Is your phone ringing less? Are people saying, maybe I don't need this after all?
Simon, the phone is definitely ringing less across the industry, whether you're in corporate solar installer or residential solar installer, it's definitely ringing less. Now, this doesn't mean that the case for solar is now no longer. Definitely not. You know, if we look at the price of electricity, it's increasing at a staggering rate. over 12.5% on the 1st of July. Eskom's asked for 36% increase for next year, and it's just going to keep going up. And if you just look at the current rates, okay, so if you look at Eskom, which is the cheapest supplier, you know, if you're buying from the city of Joburg, there's a margin that is charged. So if you're buying from Eskom, the blended rate in low season in summer is 1.50 rand. The solar industry can provide electricity in the day at around 99 cents. In the high season, which we are in now, Eskom is charging 2.30 rand as a blended rate for a large corporate.
Wow.
Again, the market is around 99 cents. So the case is obvious. The reason why the phones aren't ringing as much, they're ringing, but not as much, is because load shedding was a beautiful reminder to millions of South Africans that you need to look at an alternative for electricity. So the industry didn't even have to market.
Yeah.
Energy consumers would simply, you know, get the rude awakening that there's no electricity all of a sudden, and they would look for alternatives. So it has been and still will be a wonderful market to be in, but we definitely are on a bit of a downturn as a result of no load shedding.
And that's the deep irony. Eskom and the load shedding was the best advertisement for their competing product out there. I take your point. I mean, it is cheap. And I suppose I remember when we first got, going back 2 years, when we sort of suddenly got plunged back into load shedding, it wasn't that your phone was ringing off the hook. There wasn't enough space to answer all the calls. That's going to come and go. Also, I imagine a lot of early adopters, and now it's those folks who, for one or another reason, were thinking, not quite sure, sitting on the fence. But that pricing becomes a very compelling, particularly if you're a high energy user, but even if you're just a home residential user.
I think the case across the board, it's honestly simply a no-brainer. You know, if you're an energy consumer who consumes the majority of electricity in the day, if you aren't looking at solar, you just simply haven't done the maths. You know, a lot of businesses, okay, electricity is not their biggest expense.
Sure.
If you're a mall, if you're a property fund that you got, you know, corporate tenants who are in their offices in the day, you should have a solar system on your roof if it's big enough, and you should be selling electricity to your tenants. Maybe at a price slightly cheaper than Eskom so that the tenant benefits and you enjoy the margin. But this is a trend that is happening in this country, and it will continue to happen. If I look at the businesses that we have financed, many of them are property funds. Many of them are large malls. They've got the roof space, they've got consumption in the day, and they're really harvesting the sun.
Yeah, I mean, every single property CEO I speak to on the show is, to some or other degree, absolutely doing it. There's also the green aspect. And I mean, truthfully, we're doing this because our main state power provider can't provide the power at points. Mm-hmm. But there's the green angle, which for the residential user is a feel good. For a corporate, it truthfully is better for a corporate to have green power. It fits into your ESG philosophy.
It fits into your ESG philosophy. And guess what? The capitalists out there, there's still money to be made because there's something called carbon credits. So if you are producing and consuming green energy, you have something called a carbon credit, mm-hmm. and you can sell that into the market. And there are participants currently in South Africa that are earning money off carbon credits. And my investors and our assets are producing carbon credits, and we're about to earn off that in the next couple of months. You know, we're not generating enormous returns as a result of carbon credits, but it is an additional revenue line.
Yeah, okay. I hadn't even thought about that. The upfront cost, I imagine, and I know there are different funding solutions, and that perhaps has been one of the other innovations. I know, in fact, I think pretty much all of my friends who've put solar installation on their roofs have done some sort of payment plan, because that upfront can get a little bit, otherwise, a little bit scary, particularly if you're putting batteries in.
Absolutely. So, you know, the capital outlay is enormous. If you are able to finance solar over long term, you know, if you're a corporate over 10 or 20 years, in most instances, depending on how much batteries you decide to go with, but let's assume you don't go with any batteries, right? And you just went with solar, the amount of electricity the system will produce in rand values will be more than the cost of the finance. So in other words, by financing it over a long period, you are in a cash flow positive position versus, you know, unfortunately, most of the banks that can only finance around 7 years, there the capital outlay and the cash flow consequence is very high. So you're going to be paying the bank more every year than the system produces. So the key is to find long-term financier, and they are in the market, and that's an area that we participate in.
Yeah, and I hadn't realized it becomes cash flow positive, of course, because pull the cost down and that is saving immediately offsets it. Believe it there, John T. Sachs, partner, Geotech, really appreciate the time. That's it for today. Our poll for today is around that load shedding. Has the no load shedding for plus 100 days changed your mind about installing solar? And of course, it's a the whole conversation is just weird, is it not? And the fact that we have had plus 100 days of no load shedding, you know, we are kind of celebrating it, which is, well, it's just our friends in other parts of the world think we are crazy. Yesterday, we were chatting with Petli Radenhuis on levels to watch for a rand breakout on the lower side. It was 18.12. It flirted with it yesterday, but then moved a little higher. We asked you, which way do you think the currency will break? Almost half said it'll go stronger. Some 40% said you're expecting it to be range bound, and that certainly is where we have been now for some time. The rest was saying weaker. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokhle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us an awesome rating and a review in your podcatcher of choice. And we'll chat again tomorrow, millennials and Gen Z investors.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.